Welcome, everybody, to Then and Now. I'm Brad Sham, and we are truly delighted and honored to be sitting today with a Hall of Famer, with a record holder, with a man who is so much more than the sport that he played, Emmitt Smith. Thank you very much for the gift of your time today.
Well, thank you, Brad.
There's so many places to go, and people who are listening to this are drawn to it because of your football career.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned to you before we started recording, and we'll get to football. I promise, folks, we're going to get to plenty of football. But my goal is for everybody to walk away from this conversation feeling like, oh, I think I know a little bit more about Emmitt Smith now. So here's where I think I'd like to start. If I'm correct, on your next birthday, you're going to be 50.
You are absolutely correct.
And that, having been there quite some time ago, I can report to you that that number can be either big or little. It can feel different than it sounds. And so I think what I'd like to know is, first, a few months away from being 50, what does the prospect of reaching that number, turning that number, how does it resonate with you?
I haven't really put a whole lot of thought to it, to be honest with you. It is a milestone, so to speak. I guess my approach to turning a magical number would be, it is a magical number. And at this stage in my life, after losing my mom and so forth, I think every magical number that you get and every birthday should be a magical number, because our days are numbered and have been numbered ever since I got here on this planet. And so with that said, it's almost like a game to me. Take one day at a time, one game at a time, and enjoy your moment and be and do the best you can and maximize every day that you possibly can.
You know,
that's just my approach to it.
It's so interesting the way you put that, because from a football perspective, certainly, and to a certain degree, the other things that you've done, which we'll get to, when you say our days are numbered, numbers have framed your life.
They have.
But there's no final objective scoreboard at the end of life.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. So that gets me to this. And I have not been able to do this with everyone, but your accomplishments are so varied that I think this is... I did this with Staubach, and so I think this is good. So your time... We're going to play a little game for a second. Your time in this life has run its course, and now you're going through processing,
right,
to get through the pearly gates. And the guy at the desk at processing is brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got your resume in his hands, and he looks at it, and he says, Mr. Smith, it's lovely to meet you, and boy, you've got a tremendous list of accomplishments here. I've got to distill this information for the boss.
Right.
What should I put at the top?
What should he put at the top? Here's a man that tried to maximize every moment and every breath of his life to the fullest in a process of helping others maximize their moments.
The way you're living your life now with the Patton Emmitt Smith Charities, mm-hmm, is a great example of that. Would you agree that would not necessarily have been the definition when you walked into Dallas for the first time?
But see, Brad,
especially the giving to others.
Right. Well, but see, Brad, I think the giving of others is such a broad term, and that's why I use the word giving of others. You use it in the context of charitable contributions, which is part of what we do. But I use it also in the context of giving wisdom to help younger players, giving knowledge in this world of business to help young entrepreneurs, inspiring others to find their passion and pursue their dreams, which is part of my life and what I've been able to do. So life to me is a huge, huge testimony. And every day that you're on this earth is an opportunity to learn more about not only who you are, but what your gifts really are and how you exercise those gifts in the areas that you are passionate about. And so for me and my family and for me and my wife and for me individually, I'm very passionate about business, just as passionate as I was about football, and just as passionate as I am about my family, and just as passionate as I am about Pat and Emma Smith Charities. And so in that context, when you look at this breadth of opportunities and things that I've been able to do on and off the field, it's all about maximizing my moment and not leaving anything on the table. Living it to the fullest and enjoying the ride along the way. What I've learned through the first half of my life through sports and after the Hall of Fame is at times you have to stop and smell the roses. If that's a vacation, that's a vacation. If that's a two-week vacation, that's a two-week vacation. But being the CEO of a company, I can take a month vacation as long as we're performing right. And so when I look at all
of you've been good at hiring and delegating.
If I've been good at hiring and delegating and performance meets the road, then I have afforded myself the opportunity to do those things. And the beautiful part about it, I get to share it with others. The people who are closest to me, my wife, my kids, my friends, other family members, etc. And there's no greater joy for me than to see the smile of others having a life experience that can transform their lives and expose them to something that they otherwise might not think about.
When you left Gainesville, Florida,
mm-hmm.
did you know you were very young men frequently are interested in what makes them smile.
Right.
Not what puts a smile on the face of
right.
others.
Right.
But you had performed on a big enough stage as a football player both in high school and college to understand that you were an entertainer also.
Mm-hmm.
You were making people happy, but that's not why you were doing it.
That's not why I was doing it.
But what was there a time when you look back on it, you couldn't have known it then.
Right.
When you look back on it, was there a time somewhere in those first few years in Dallas, I'm guessing, where that whole philosophy kind of crystallized for you and you realized that this is good, I'm going to maximize this, I have goals, and I have to prepare myself
right.
for what's next for me and right. for what I can do with this later.
Right. Well, I think it crystallized itself way before Dallas, to be honest with you. How it crystallizes itself, I think everything is a process. And so when I think back to all things, to the word in the Bible, when it says all things work together for the good of those, I look at this moment when I had my very first job.
I
spoke to somebody about this just a couple of days ago. I worked at Magnolia Nursing Home when I was 13 years old.
Doing?
Janitorial work. Mopping the floors, painting, trimming the hedges, cutting the grass, walking the elderly, taking out.
Is it in Pensacola?
This is in Pensacola, bodily fluids and all this, taking out trash, all those things. I did that for four hours. That was my summer job. I worked for 4 hours a day. But those are the things that I did during that process. And what I learned was I was able to save money throughout the whole summer. Here's where the light bulb went off. I saved money, and my mom asked to borrow money. And I gave her money, and it felt good to give it to her. That right there gave me the sense of the power of being able to bless someone, at the same time to be able to earn my own way and become independent. It gave me a glimpse into what it's like to have my own in my own pocket and not having to go to mom or dad and ask for, can I have, can I get? Especially when they didn't have it to give. So that was one part of it. The other part happened is when my sophomore year to when we got in trouble.
At Florida.
There was a big fight between football players and a fraternity house. And I was part of the Dirty Dozen is what they called us. But the headlines read, Smith and 11 others
Taught you a great lesson, didn't
taught
it?
Taught me a very good lesson.
So you understand that anybody who travels with you, if they get in a car or an airplane, they say, don't let this one go down because it's going to be Smith and 11 others.
And 11 others. And so I learned then that guilty by association is part of it, but yet when you have a name, brand, your name, it probably comes at the very high. And Michael Irvin shared this with me when I became a Dallas Cowboys. The press, they're going to make money on your way up. They're going to make money on your way down. So whatever you're doing, just know that that's going to happen. And so understanding those things really helped me help craft some of the decisions that I made. I did not always make all the right decisions. I'm not going to sit up and tell you I did. That is not true. I made some serious mistakes, some known, some unknown. It's better that the unknowns are not known.
The reason they're unknown.
That's the reason why they are unknown. But the point is learning those things and paying attention to those things and having the wisdom to say, or the humility. It's not necessarily wisdom, it's humility to say, okay, this right here could have derailed my opportunity. I don't want nothing to derail my opportunity. And you also learn it too. When I learned it when I became a pro too. James Washington and I driving down the road. first weekend I'm here in Dallas after the draft, and we have a mini camp, and we going to a nightclub over here off of Northwest Highway. We don't know our way around, and I'm riding in a big white riding a big white Mercedes Benz. And we riding
not
down.
Your Mercedes.
Not mine. I'm the passenger. So I'm riding down, Harry Hines. No one knew. I didn't know.
I was going to say, part of me right now wants to say, Emmett, what were y'all doing on Harry
That's
Hines?
The point. Here's the deal. We take 635, we exit Joseph Lane, we take a right on Joseph Lane, trying to find where we're going. And so we weaving our way back, and we end up on Harry Hines, and we're going down Harry Hines towards Northwest Highway, and we get pulled over by cops, Dallas PD. And this is like my first weekend in Dallas.
Welcome to Dallas.
Welcome to Dallas. And they pull us over, they ask for a driver's license, and they ask what we're doing in this neighborhood. Do y'all know where y'all are? And I'm like, I don't know where I'm at. I'm just riding with him. So I learned another valuable lesson. Drive yourself. Drive yourself. So, and here's the beautiful thing. When you drive yourself, you can leave whenever you want to. You can go whenever you want to go, and you can go wherever you want to go, and you're not at the liberty of the next person. So you've been in clubs, or you've been out when you're ready to leave, but someone else is not. So now you find yourself there later than you really want to be.
And there was no Uber then.
There was no Uber then. So those are just lessons that I learned along the way, and humbling yourself to the point to where you can receive those lessons and learn other things along the way. So
you may have just answered this, and I've asked you this before, but not in this forum. And I think it's one of the most interesting aspects of the whole thing that the Dallas Cowboys of the early 90s meant.
Right.
As you said, you are not a perfect person. You were a single young man playing for the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas. Young man can enjoy some of the fruits of life.
People do.
Yes, people do. Yes. Your name was never associated with some of the most unsavory things that happened. I'm not saying you didn't do them, nor am I asking if you did. But your name was never associated with some of the most unsavory things that some of your best friends were associated with, whether they did them or not.
Right.
Why is that? How did you manage that?
Well, again, like I shared with you, a couple things life experiences have taught me, and seeing, having to have that hard conversation with my father when I got suspended and my mom. The one thing my father was happy about that we did stick together, but there is punishment to come. and knowing that my name was thrust out there in such a negative light. And to be honest with you, many of you might be thinking that, yeah, you was in the middle of a fight. Yeah, you, No, I was in the middle of it, but I had torn my pectoral muscle and my arm was in a sling. So why would I want to fight somebody with a one arm and I can't, and I'm not even there? So I was guilty by being in there and not convincing my teammates that this is not the right
thing. Again, you're in Florida.
And I'm at Florida. Right. And so the thing is here is when you are not able to help someone neutralize the situation, and then you feel like you let them down. But you understand that there are repercussions for just about everything that we do. And so trying to make the right decisions and not taking things for granted or feeling like in the day's world, my swag got me covered. I got the swag where the popo won't give me a ticket. Or, you know, that's the streets term now, swag and this and street cred and all this stuff.
But the interesting thing is that being a young African-American man in the early 90s in a southern city, that's a two-sided coin.
It's always a two-sided coin. Whether or not it was the 1990s and being a young African-American or 2018 and being young and an African-American, it's always going to be a two-sided coin. And so that coin never changes. And the coin won't change.
But did you understand that at that time?
You have to change.
Did you understand that maybe sometime there might be some person out there who wants to make their bones on hauling a football player?
There's always somebody out there.
You knew that then?
Oh, yes. There's always somebody out there looking to make a name for themselves. There's always this cop or this person want to say, well, I pulled him over. I gave him a ticket. Or I arrested so-and-so, so-and-so. Or I got this on tape and I'm going to post this myself. In today's society, everybody want to post certain things. And so no matter where you are nowadays, everybody walks around with a cell phone. Everybody has a chance to become a reporter. Everybody want to sell something to someone else and be anonymous.
And there has always been fake news.
It is always. Always.
So, what do you think life for your Cowboys team would have been like? How, if at all, would it have been different if everybody had cell phones? If you had been living in a world where everyone was filming your every move?
Well, everything that you see today would have been the same way. I think it would have been the same way. Because I think if we had access to what technology is providing right now, we would have the same kind of platforms. Because people would have been just as smart and wanted to capitalize on the technology that's existing right now. Why not? Because it's exposure. It's another form of free media. The way I see it.
Interesting.
The way I see it, the world provides the content for you and I.
Mm-hmm.
I'm part of the world and I'm part of the content. No one is walking around trying to film you, Brad.
That's so true.
No one's walking around trying to film anybody that's in the press.
Right.
But if you're not in the press, it's free game.
Unless you do something really wrong.
You have to do something really wrong. And even if you are doing something really wrong, someone has to catch it.
Correct.
So if you're not there to catch it,
but something you just said is really interesting to me about the reasons why it might be the same, because I'm thinking of some very young players in the NFL, particularly right now, who almost seem to embrace the fact that everyone has that camera. Some of us, especially of my generation, would think, wow. And I know some of your teammates who think, man, I'm glad there were no camera phones when we were out running the streets.
Right.
But there are some of these young men right now, as you say that, there are some of them who see those camera phones not as a threat, but as another opportunity for being recognized and well-known.
Brad, you're talking about kids that are growing up with this technology readily available in their hands. And they have embraced this moment. What they haven't embraced, I don't think, is the scrutiny of it all. Some of these kids never experienced the scrutiny at this level. And so it's that piece that I believe some folks are getting accustomed to. They thought that it was all free game and it was going to be okay because it provided street cred. But now they're understanding that bad press is not always good press, or bad press is better than no press. No, it doesn't work that way. Not all attention is good. And at the end of the day, I guess you can throw that part in fake news, because you got to have the good and the bad, period.
So speaking of attention, one of the things that you have said post-football that attracted my attention the most was that a couple of years after Dancing with the Stars, that you felt like you had been and were being, now I'm going back to just a couple of years after you did it the mm-hmm. first time, mm-hmm. that you said you had been and were being recognized more for being on Dancing with the Stars than you ever had been for playing football.
Yeah, for sure.
And is that still the case?
I think so. I think it's the one.
And what do you think of that?
Well, what it says to me is that sports, and we call it sports and entertainment, but I'm going to say in the sports industry, there's a certain group of people that absolutely love sports and love the individual players and watch it religiously. And then that there's another large group of folks that don't care nothing about sports, they just care about the entertainment world. And they kind of, we call it sports and entertainment, but with Dancing with the Stars, it intersected both. Because it brought the sports enthusiasts into a world of entertainment, all because of the connectivity to the individual that was actually on the show. And what you see here is a collision of two major industries coming together in one.
And you seem to understand that.
Yes.
I know you do now. My perception is, this is what I want you to talk about when you were doing, you seem to say, oh, I see what's going on here.
Well, yes. Yes and no, I didn't realize how much entertainment, the visibility in the entertainment space really was. And doing Dance with the Stars gave me, and what I loved about Dance with the Stars was it was actually a family show. Think about it this way, sports. Not all family members are watching sports. Not all family members watch basketball. Not all family members watch baseball or football or basketball or hockey or soccer or whatever it is. In the entertainment world, there are families that sit down every night and watch a television show. Some form, some shape. That means the kids, the mama and the daddies, including the grandparents, and so forth. And that's what Dance with the Stars did. It brought families together. And that's a beautiful thing, because there you have family conversations, which oftentimes does not happen in some cases. And so being a part of that was a tremendous experience, because it broadened the perspective and gave me a chance to introduce myself to not only the sports world in a different light, but also into the entertainment world in a different light, and to be able to project this sense of I can do it too. And that's what sports bring, because people sit on the sideline like, man, that he's awesome. If I can make them feel like they can get on the football field and do the same thing that I'm doing, I've done a great job. If I can do that in the dance on the dance floor and make them want to get up and dance, we've done a great job.
But the number of, when you say I can make them feel like I can do it too, the number of people who are going to realistically have the opportunity to do that playing football, that's minuscule compared to the number of people who might do it on the dance floor.
They know that.
So what doors do you think that experience, Dancing with the Stars, opened for you, whether they were real doors or mental doors that made you say, okay, I gotta broaden my horizons here?
20 million plus households. That door is the door to the television screen. That television screen is extremely powerful. Anytime, and I hate to use the term average, or anytime someone that is not on television is looking at someone that's on television, they automatically assume that they are successful. That's the unfortunate part. And anytime anyone sees someone successful, they think that it happened overnight. What people fail to realize is that the process to become that, or even the things that you have to learn, the things that we talked about early in the show, the sacrifices that one must make in order to become that, there's a lot of sacrifices and a lot of things that you lose in becoming that person.
Lose a lot of freedom to go do whatever you want to do.
You lose your anonymity completely. And the unfortunate part, everybody know you, but you don't know who they are.
I have heard a story about when your daughter was in school, and which member of the Eagles was in the same class?
Don Henley.
Don Henley. And I have heard stories that you would be out on Indian princess trips or whatever, mm-hmm. and the girls are over here and the dads are over here, mm-hmm. and people literally climbed over Don Henley to try to get a look at you or a picture with you, and they had no idea who Don Henley was.
I didn't have an idea who Don Henley was.
Yeah, but you can be forgiven for that.
No, but I knew the Eagles.
Right.
But I did not know Don Henley.
But what I'm talking about the anonymity and the what.
But here's the thing. The anonymity, yes, is gone, but that's...
By the way, that's a true story, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know about the climbing over Don Henley to get to me, but I will...
That's what I've heard. I got a pretty good authority.
That's fine. But what I will say is this. I do remember Don Henley in the group of Indian princes along with myself. Sitting there, the girls are out running around on the ranch, and we're sitting here listening at the Eagles music. And I'm singing the tunes, and I'm like, man, I love the Eagles. And one of my buddies leaned over to me and said, you know who that is over there? I said, no, that's Don. You know, that's Don Henley, the lead singer of the Eagles. And I almost fall out my seat.
And that changed your perspective of who he was, didn't it?
Yes, because what I saw myself in him. Wanting to be reserved, wanting to be that dad, not Don Henley, the Eagles, amongst other dads. He wanted to have that experience, that daddy experience with his daughter, like everyone else is having their daddy experience with their daughters. That's what I saw in Don Henley, laying back, not really touting who he is, not walking around with this, I am Don Henley of the Eagles. Y'all sit over there, and I said, no, that wasn't him at all.
He was Don.
He was Don. And you know what? I appreciated that about him, and I still do, because he is such a humble person. And he walks lightly. And he walks in a room you wouldn't even know it. And that I appreciated.
But you can be, Emmett Smith, can be as humble as Don Henley is, and you're not walking in a room unnoticed.
Not all the time. Not all the time. I mean, my son Elijah and I was over at Great Wolf Lodge this week, and he invited a couple of his friends. And so I had on a hat, had on sunglasses, walking around, trying to do the daddy thing with my kid and his friends. And yes, I got recognized, and quite a bit. I had people wanting to take photos. And for me and my baby boy, it's rare that he and I get a chance to have one-on-one daddy time. And trust me, I wanted to fight everybody off for that one-on-one time with my son.
But you can't.
But I can't. But I had to tell him no. And I don't have no problem telling no. And the good, I have to tell people no, because this is not about them. This is about my kid having the one-on-one time that he needs without all of the fanfare that comes along with it. And unfortunately for the rest of the world, they may not understand it from that perspective because they see it, but I think that they got it. I think that most of them got it and received it. And so we were able to enjoy it, and he enjoyed it. He had a blast. His friends had a blast. I enjoyed it with him. And all I can say is thank y'all for allowing that to take place, because it's hard for daddy to go and find things like that for his kid. And those are the moments that kids love. And so whether it's at Great Wolf Lodge or whether it's at Six Flags of Texas or whether it's Disney, wherever it's at, my kids want to enjoy those same things.
All right, before we
and I'm not going to shut down the whole park just to go in there so he can.
Right. which has been done.
But to me, you shouldn't have to do that.
No, I agree. And you have the wherewithal to do it if you want to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, before we dive into some real pure D football, the business opportunities that you've pursued and in some cases created for mm-hmm. yourself. Mm-hmm. Especially since Dancing with the Stars,
right.
Are to me A, and this is what I'd like you to talk about, what you're doing now, but to me they are A, an outgrowth of the, Staubach was one of the first I ever saw who understood while he was playing,
right.
I better get ready for something else, and I think I heard you talk about this a few minutes ago. I'm in the moment, I understand where I am, I'm trying to do some things, and by the way, you better figure out a way to use this for later,
right?
Because this is not going to last.
Correct.
So how did you do that with the business endeavors that you have pursued and the ones that are taking the most of your time right now?
Well, again, my background and the people, I share this with a lot of folks whenever I'm speaking. I was introduced to the world of construction when I was 11 years old through my coach, Charlie Egger, who taught me how to read blueprints and floor plans, not knowing whether I would ever utilize those skills or not. But football became my vehicle for me leaving Pensacola and getting higher education and going to the University of Florida itself. and then being drafted by the Dallas Cowboys and coming from $0 to hundreds of thousands of dollars and perhaps even millions at that time as a rookie, let's just call it hundreds of thousands of dollars. That part in itself was just a process altogether. But then this world, this new world, and I've always heard football is a business and you need to treat it as such. Been thrust into this world of not only performance and football on the field, but now engaging in this world of endorsement world was a clear indication that football is a business. People pay you because not only are you a performer, you're performing at a level that says this product here is good because it performs well and it's consistent, just like our product / Tide Pods, if you will. It's good, it's consistent, it cleans, and so they kind of work together. Bring me together to work with them on that part. High performance vehicle, high performance athlete. You see those things. And that's why corporations really go out and solicit the help of athletes.
The young man has to be aware enough, there are some, and especially as the money has gone crazy,
right.
There are some who walk into the sport, it seems to some of us, with a certain feeling of entitlement. I will succeed on the field, therefore I will be entitled to all of these other things. But I don't think that even your generation could do that yet.
No, Michael Jordan was the model. Let's make no bones about it. He was the guy who set the stage of what endorsements should look like and how you should try to control your brand and grow your brand. During my era.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, everybody that followed from that point on has been following the Michael Jordan brand and Michael Jordan model. And so learning all different types of businesses and industries and watching Barry Andrews, who owns Miller Distributing right here, watching Jerry Jones grow the Dallas Cowboys after investing $150 million in buying a team in Texas Stadium, and leveraging the brand of the Dallas Cowboys into what is now known as a $5 billion company, and how he leveraged the athletes with his corporate clients and corporate sponsorships, all of those things. Again, associating quality with quality, associating performance with performance, being number one, being number one, coming together. And in between there, there's a deal to be had. So seeing all those things, but also recognizing there's so much more. Now we're talking about technology and how technology companies like Mark Cuban built with broadband. Was it broadband?
No, it was radio.com. It's what it started with.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Mark Cuban and his and Todd Wagner and what they did. The Perots and what they did from a real estate and technology standpoint. Tech first, real estate came second. Tech made money, real estate acquisitions, and went on from there. And then seeing Roger Staubach growing from making $125,000 a year playing a game of football and having support his family, saying, no, I got to become a broker. So he become a broker with Henry S. Miller, and then he grows his, and then he branches off into himself and becomes the Staubach Company. Tenant rep business. Now everybody's doing tenant rep business, all because of what Staubach saw and how people try to cut him at the ankles at the time. Most people may not know that. Even Roger Staubach, people tried to take him out in the business world because he was doing something that they were not doing. And he had a stronghold on it that they could not get their arms around because he had a brand that was synonymous with great and winning. And people wanted to associate those two things. He was humble. He was connective. He was inclusive. And he was sharing, unlike some other folks. When you see that, that's a different thing. And so seeing all those things right before you, the landscapes was already there. The question is, which one of these lanes will you choose? I chose a very similar lane. And my lane is real estate, full service solution company that E. Smith Legacy Holdings has right now.
For now.
For now.
All right, we got to do some football, or nobody will ever listen to any of these again.
No, they love that. I think they're going to love it.
No, I think they do too, but they also want to hear some football. So
let's give them a little bit.
We'll give them a little football. You know, when you prepare to have a conversation like this with someone that you know, you look back, you try to get some perspective. So I've said this, and I'm not the only one. I don't believe anybody will ever break the NFL rushing record. Games change. Running backs don't get the opportunity.
Hey, don't say that to my son, EJ.
EJ, let's have dinner. I'm going to tell you. What I forgot was by what an incredible margin you have the NFL touchdown record. You scored 104 touchdowns. Is that rushing touchdowns?
No.
No, it's all total touchdowns.
164
touchdowns.
Rushing touchdowns.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Oh, yeah. You scored 164 rushing touchdowns.
Yeah.
There's not an active player with 100. And the game, and the ones who are active, they're not scoring more than 4 or 5 a year anymore. That record's never going to be broken. And that's one that I think maybe folks forget about. You were a touchdown machine. Did you just have a nose for the end zone? Did you appreciate at the time that aspect of the ability that you had?
I had a nose for the end zone, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And if you go back in my history, even to as a little boy, I scored a lot of touchdowns as a young kid, like many young football players have done. But when you get to high school and you score 108 and you lead the nation in touchdowns, that's another thing. And so scoring touchdowns is something that I've done. I get teased. My youngest brother Emil used to say, I know why they call you Scoey. Scoey was my nickname. It's because you score a lot of touchdowns. That's what he used to say. So Scoey go score a touchdown.
Why was it Scoey?
It was my mom loved the nickname, and she called me that.
Was it after Scoey Mitchell?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Are you impressed that I knew of Scoey Mitchell?
Yes, I am impressed. I am impressed. Because that's where it came from.
Yeah, he was an entertainer.
Yeah, he was an entertainer. Yeah. And so that's how I got the nickname Scoey.
Okay.
After Scoey Mitchell. And so, literally, I know what it meant, really meant. But to your point, I did have a nose for the end zone. and it just translated that way. And what else can I say? 164 touchdowns later.
How is the world of football and externally that Ezekiel Elliott is trying to inhabit different from the one that you were trying to inhabit in your third year in the league?
Well, I don't know if the world is that different, but systems are somewhat different. I think teams now are more inclined to go more with a two-back system versus having, they have yet to find that one guy that could be there for first, second, and third down and last 16 games or 20 games.
And last.
Yeah.
You played 15 years in the National Football League.
Right.
There's never going to be another running back play 15 years in the National Football League.
Well, I don't know. Well, you know what? You're probably right because of the way the system is. I think there's more information readily available now that gives teams, and I think the information was there even when we played, gives teams insight in terms of longevity. And truly, and I heard somebody, I can't remember who it was. Was it Gil Brandt or was it, I think it was Gary Horton, whom I used to work with at ESPN. We talked about me coming out of college and how I was evaluated. And people said there's only so many hits in a body. They're absolutely correct. There are only so many hits in a body. And not to mention only so many hits in a body, but age in itself has a way of limiting what you can do and how you can perform once you get to a certain level, because football is truly a young person's sport. And so you can look at the anomalies like Marcus Allen, who played when he was 38 years old, Jerry Rice, who played till he was 40. You can look at those guys, but when you go into Marcus's career, a lot of his career was halted because of the way the Raiders utilized him. But he was in great shape every year to play a 16 to 20 game schedule, which preserved his body. And so therefore he was able to play a lot longer.
I have two more football questions and then we're gonna wrap up with my thanks. You've been as generous with your time and your thoughts as I knew you would be. We did this program with Darryl Johnston. And everybody knows about your relationship, and you laid your heart open at your Hall of Fame induction. Mm-hmm. Darryl told me something I'd never heard, really? Which was that when he was a junior at Syracuse, okay, and you were a sophomore at Florida,
right,
he was interested in studying young running backs. He was fascinated by running backs, and he was attracted to your performances at Florida. He looked at it, he said, this young man's pretty good. I just have a feeling I need to kind of know about him.
Really?
And that when, because of that, when you were drafted 1 year after him, he really felt and feels that God brought you together, the two of you. Talk about that.
He did. God did bring us together. God brought us together at the right time to do the things that we were able to do. Because here's what people fail to realize. When you're on a 1-15 team and you have a new owner, a new head coach, a new staff, and there's a revolving door of bodies coming in and out for about a 2.5-3 year period. Every week. Let's call it 2.5 years because it wasn't three for sure.
Right.
There's a weeding process that goes on. And for a guy like Darryl Johnston, who was somewhat undersized, and then for a guy like myself, who was drafted at 17th pick when I was projected to go in the top 10, and the Cowboys did not have a pick until the 21st, maybe 22nd pick of my draft in 90, and so many players were taken prior to that, and I did not go in the top 10. Who would have thought? I didn't even think that I had the chance to even play for the Dallas Cowboys.
So when I got drafted by the Cowboys, for me, it was like a dream come true because this is the team.
Because you thought you were going to go up way high.
Yeah, I thought I was going to be in the top 10. And I thought I would have ended up in Tampa Bay or Seattle. Those are the two picks that I thought. I thought Blair Thomas would go number two to the Jets unless the Jets jumped over, picked me over him. That didn't happen. And so when I fell to the Dallas Cowboys and the Cowboys traded up, they traded up.
After they couldn't get James
After
Francis.
After they couldn't get James Francis and selected me at the 17th pick, I mean, it's like a dream come true. Now, Darrell Johnson is already there. But I got to remind you that this door is revolving.
Right.
And he could have easily been part of the guy that was going out. Tommy Agee could have been easily part of the guys that was going out. But for some reason, I think spirituality has a whole lot to do with who we are and who we become and who we are associated with, because it is predestined that we do these things together. And Darrell Johnson is absolutely correct. We were meant to be together. Troy Aikman, Mike Irvin, and the triplets were meant to be together. Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson, and our coaching staff and that team, for the three Super Bowls that we played together, we were meant to be together. There's no way around it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You cannot dispute it. It is what it is. Chalk it up. Put it in three-inch bold letters. We were meant to be together.
last one. You know who was not meant to be together? Emmitt Smith and Bill Parcells.
True.
My memory is, if you just look at your bio, it says that you played for the Cowboys through 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And then you played for the Cardinals in 2003.
Correct.
But that leaves out the part about Bill Parcells being hired and you still being on the roster.
Right.
I've never asked you about that conversation, relationship, what that was like. You're both Hall of Famers.
Right.
You were in different places and had different... But what was that relationship like?
You know, we never really had a chance to forge a relationship. I've always respected Bill Parcells as a head coach. Jimmy Johnson loved Bill Parcells. So I knew that Parcells was coming in and was going to whip this team back into shape. I knew that was going to happen. I wanted to be a part of it so badly. But again, I'm going to go back to being predestined. I got released into my destiny. The destiny is what I call the destiny of closure. And by being able to go to the Arizona Cardinals, and the Cardinals afforded me two things. And this is why I say spirituality is part of this. The Cowboys released me to go to the Arizona Cardinals, who chose me. In the 2 years I was there, the Cardinals was looking to transition itself into their new stadium. And guess who I had a chance to play with? Josh McCown, Anquan Boldin, Larry Fitzgerald, Adrian Wilson, and some other guys. And in that process of those 2 years, I was like a bridge to the Cardinals going on and becoming the Arizona Cardinals that you know today. Competitive, Super Bowl contenders at some point and grow and go on. And Anquan Boldin had a successful career. Larry Fitzgerald, we could talk about him going into the Hall of Fame and so forth and on and on. And the Cardinals winning more games than they probably did prior in the 90s. So, and when I say release me into my destiny, release me into a place to where I was able to say, football has passed me by. And my love for the game was so much wrapped around playing for the Dallas Cowboys. I would have ran through a wall for the Cowboys. And at this time, being 34 and 35, I'm not running through too many walls for anybody. So closure is also something that we all must have. You find it when you lose loved ones. You find it when you have athletes leaving the game sooner than they expected or they really want to. It's hard to transition into the next phase. For me, Parcells releasing me and the Cowboys releasing me gave me a chance to go to the Arizona Cardinals and enjoy two more years of football and pour out some wisdom onto Larry Fitzgeralds and Josh McCowans and Anquan Boldins and Adrian Wilsons and many other players. That was awesome for me. And I was able to have closure and leave the game completely satisfied with everything that I had achieved.
What you've done with the first half of your life is pretty impressive. And all of us who've been around you can't wait to see what the second half has in store. Thanks for your time, Emmett.
Thank you, Brad.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Emmett Smith.
I'm Brad Sham. That's Then and Now.
Then and Now with Brad Sham is a production of Vocal. For more information and more programming, please visit vocalnow.com. That's VOKALnow.com.